This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
WEEI Afternoons, it's 3 o'clock. That means in a little bit it'll be time for the three-point stance, but more importantly, it was time for our friends at Shaw's and Star Market to drop off a very nice platter of wings. It's football season, boys. What goes better with football season than wings? The answer, nothing, Ted Johnson.
I'm not a wing guy, but all my friends that are wing people love wings.
If you watch football with a group of people,
yeah,
which is part of your problem, you don't like to watch football with a group of people, right?
I can't stand people watching football games with people.
Well, this is one area where I enjoy watching football with people, and if you bring a platter of wings from Shaw's or Star Market, I guarantee you'll be popular at that party the second you show up. And I was just telling you guys off air, the salt and vinegar wings from Shaw's down by me, but Star Market, same thing, are unbelievable. Like, they are wing specialty store quality out of your Shaw's.
I will tell you this. I probably go to my Shaw's. I'm not a wing guy, but I buy everything, all my other groceries from Shaw's, and I'm probably there 3 times a week.
You should be.
Shout out to Melvin, and shout out to my guy Mike.
Who's Melvin?
Those are guys that work at
the
Shaw's.
Butcher.
They're in Melrose.
Look at you knowing your Shaw's employees' first name.
You got to form a relationship with your, people at the brewery, people at the grocery store, the barber. Like, that's what it's all about.
So, Fitzy, I know you're a party guy. You're a man of the people. You like to have a few brews and wings and football and do the whole thing. And you know how you could prepare for that? You could get a party platter from our friends at Shaw's or Star Market. You can order those online or in store. If you want to go online, it's shaws.com/orderahead or starmarket.com/orderahead to get sandwiches or wings. We got some cookies. We got some guac. We got some chips over there. They're all made fresh in store, and they are perfect for the football season, which, did we mention, gets underway tonight, the season opener. The defending champion Eagles, their coach didn't know that they had a banner unfurling happening tonight, so he's not going to be out there for that.
Nah, he knew. He's just a dink.
Is he a hardo?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
he's
you
the hardo.
But you called him a dink, and I don't, is a hardo always a dink?
No, but I think he fits both criteria, wouldn't you?
I think he's a dink and a hardo. I agree with you.
I think it's easy for hardos to wade over into the dink waters.
Tell me about it. I do it all the time. It's 3 o'clock. It's time for the three-point stance.
319!
It's the three-point stance.
I'm going to count to three.
Tatum puts up a three.
Easiest 1, 2, 3.
Pasternak, a hat trick, and a 4-3 Boston lead.
Three. And it is gone. A 3-run homer, and the game is tied.
On WEEI Afternoons.
Time for today's three-point stance here on WEEI Afternoons, brought to you by Jeffrey Glassman, Injury Lawyers, Boston's go-to injury attorney for over 30 years. If you've been hurt in a car or work accident, you and your party platter of wings got to get Glassman. Call all sevens at 617-777-7777. 3 o'clock here on WEEI Afternoons, three hosts, each of which will present their stances on the biggest stories in the world of sports today. Our order, Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens, and Ted Johnson. Andy will lead us off. You get 60 seconds for your opening stance. Are you ready?
Indeed.
All right, Stiz, let's give him 60 seconds. Go ahead.
So a couple weeks ago in a three-point stance, I told you I didn't really want to see Yoshida anymore, and I still don't. I still don't like ground balls in the infield to the second baseman for outs all the time. I also am done watching on my television screen on Nesson Jordan Hicks, and I know he was put on the IL today with a apparent shoulder issue that seemed to come out of nowhere after another hellacious performance in the second inning last night. He's one of the highest paid relievers in baseball for next year, $6 million. And I know everybody's talking about the money. Our buddy Brian Barrett put out some of the numbers. Basically, there's 175 relievers in baseball, and Jordan Hicks is ranked somewhere between 172 and 173. He's terrible. I know our buddy Alex Cora loves velocity, and yes, Jordan Hicks has velocity, but he has nothing that goes with it. And I've come up with this very simple idea. Get rid of him, DFA him, cut him, whatever. Get rid of him. And I know everybody says, but he's making $25 million. Just look at that as the buyout for the Rafi Devers contract. You wanted to get out from under $250 million. Look at this $25 million as a buyout. It's a 10% buyout. It's like they do in the NBA. Just move on from the guy. He's bad mojo. He's hurting you. He hurt you on the field. And everybody just goes, ugh, when he comes into the game. You're not going to salvage him. You can't make him better. He's bounced around. He's unsalvageable, if that's a word. Move on from Jordan Hicks.
I think that's what they did. I think that's what they're doing. I think that's what
I want all
the
gone. Not he's, lingering and hanging.
I guess
this is Fenway flu, Ted.
You've seen him for the last time.
Good.
I can't imagine they would put him back out there again.
I wish I had seen him for the last time before last night. Because last night was hellacious. And again, my buddy Will Fleming, the tone of his voice in that inning as Hicks gave up, what did he give up, 6 hits in a row or 5 hits? Like, just abysmal. And it is kind of sad. I mean, for a guy to throw 100 and you're like, wow, he should be a good major league pitcher. He's not. He's not. And I understand why team after team falls in love with him. And it's like, well, we'll make him a starter. Oh, no, we'll make him back to reliever. Oh, no, the Red Sox want him because they'll fix him because Andrew Bailey has this whole repertoire of ways to fix guys.
He just throws it right down the middle.
Yeah.
It's just his stuff is electric.
Right down the middle.
It's electric to swing a bat at. And the formula is the same. Will Fleming even outlined it last night. He misses with his first two pitches. Then he hangs a slider right over the plate, and someone with a bat in their hand who swung it before proceeds to hit it 500 miles.
The cement mixer, as Flem Dog called it yesterday as it was being crushed. This team has a lot of issues. Some of them are out of their control, right? This one's in your control. You don't need to have him on your roster. You don't need to have him in a game. You can just move on. Please do.
A third of an inning, 4 hits, 4 runs, all earned, 1 strikeout. And 1 home run given up. Somehow managed to do that in 16 pitches. Oh,
he did get you out of the first inning.
That's impressive.
He got you out of the first inning. He came in the first inning.
Eventually,
Should have never asked him to pitch two.
No.
Yeah, that was rough. And I tell you what, Andy, he's kind of, I know we haven't had this name in a couple weeks, so start the count over. He's a cautionary tale for your boy Mason Miller. Because he is a guy who throws 100 miles an hour, who, in Jordan Hicks' case, has been moved all around. You talked about it. Try to make him, he's going to be an elite starter. Now he's a closer. Now he's kind of somewhere in between. He starts some games. He's a reliever some games.
Yep.
Don't screw around with these guys who are elite in one thing that they do. You almost screwed up Garrett Whitlock doing it, and Daniel Bard had his entire career ruined because of it.
So. But he's just a tease, I feel like. Baseball people see him, and they're like, oh, I'm the one who can fix him. I'm the one that can figure it out. I'm the one that can harness the electric stuff and turn it into productive stuff. Sometimes you just need to know when to walk away.
He broke
the
pitching
lab. Doctor-level hubris, like, oh, I'm the one who can fix him. Nope, he broken. Just let it go.
Please
he is so bad that he broke the Red Sox pitching lab. Not even Breslow, Bailey, and Driveline can fix Jordan Hicks. But maybe the shoulder injury, you know, that's been barking for weeks at this point, I think.
Well, he blew his final audition to be a part of the potential postseason solution yesterday. Like,
oh, you can't put him in the postseason. Good Lord.
Not the majors.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, he's been too bad too many times now to ever take a chance on that. But please, Kyle Harrison, get over the ankle injury. Get on up here and show us if you got anything, because we could use an extra arm.
Yes, that is very much the case. So we'll have to keep an eye on that one. But Jordan Hicks is gone for the time being. So he's got 2 more years left on his contract. $12.5 million in cash per season.
Just take the money.
Do we see him down in Florida in spring training in 2026? Yes or no?
My guess is yes.
Yes.
Okay.
My guess is yes, because he's part of the Devers trade.
Yep.
They see the stuff. I do think Cora is a guy that errs on the side of velo, velocity. He likes having relievers that have velocity, and they'll convince themselves that with a winter, with a spring training, they can fix it.
It's a Craig Breslow trade too.
Yep.
It's, you know, that's, they don't want to get rid of those guys too fast.
You know what I wonder about, too? This kind of happened with Tanner Houck, and then we found out, oh, you know what? Surgery. Gone for all of 2026. I wonder if there's something else that could come out of that. But we'll see.
The more problems they find.
Wow, this guy really can't pitch, and now everything's broken. Okay, we'll leave that one there. Nick Fitzy Stevens, are you ready, my friend?
Why not? Let's do this thing.
All right, your 60 seconds begin right now.
All right, for those of you who can't just wait for some football but are especially excited to find out how this reconfigured Patriots offensive line and reconfigured Patriots defensive line can hold up. Well, you won't have to wait much longer than Sunday, just after 1 p.m. at Gillette Stadium, when they take on the Las Vegas Raiders. Because while the Raiders are not necessarily the best defensive line in football, nor do they have the best offensive line in football, one thing they don't have on offense is many wide receivers, as Amari Cooper pulled Avante Davis today and decided to retire before making any more meaningful contributions. Let's all be honest, he hasn't been good in 3 years anyway. But when it comes to the Raiders offense, they do have a good offensive line featuring left tackle Colton Miller, who we all know the Patriots should have potentially been interested in the offseason, and guard Jaxon Powers-Johnson. Solid line. Alex Kappa still hanging around. And while they don't have many wide receivers, they do have good blocking tight ends in Michael Mayer, the best tight end on planet Earth, and Brock Bowers, and good running backs with Genty, Mostert, Zamir White, and UNH sensation Dylan Law. But on defensive line, you don't have to look much further than Max Crosby and Malcolm Kuntz and old pal Adam Butler to give the Patriots offensive line a test. So we're going to learn a whole lot about the offensive line and the defensive line this Sunday in the opener, boys.
So you're taking the Raiders. You're talking up the Raiders. I heard a Raiders pick in there.
I'm going to tell you straight up, this is a field goal game. I haven't decided yet who I'm picking, but this is a field goal game.
I have decided, and I won't tell you till tomorrow, but you might not like it.
I might not like it, but what if I make the same pick?
You still won't like it. You could make a pick you don't even like yourself making. You may feel bad about yourself when you look in the mirror tomorrow.
I don't even know what that means.
I feel bad about myself when I wake up? No, I don't. But honestly, we're not talking about going up against the 2003 Carolina Panthers defensive line. We're not talking about the 2000 Ravens here or anything like that, but we know the Raiders can bring the pass rush, and they're going to be scheming up with old pal Patrick Graham all sorts of intricate pass rushes, overloads, and schemes that are going to give the Pats offensive line fits. And then as far as the Raiders offense goes, no, they're not going to light the world on fire. It's Bowers, it's Myers, and I guess Geno Smith. But the fact that they'll probably deploy a lot of screens, short passes in that run game, that's going to give Barmore and Milton Williams and Tongas and these defensive ends all they can handle on Sunday as well. So I think it's going to be a big, big show me game Sunday.
Teddy.
Yep.
You scared of the Raiders?
No. Gosh, no.
You're not scared of anything.
No, I'm not.
I bet you are.
I'm a little bit concerned. Like, what is Chip Kelly going to come out with?
Yeah.
So it's just not really knowing what to expect is what would have me the most nervous if I'm, coming up with schemes on the defense.
Yeah, there's a lot in this game that makes it really interesting and unpredictable. Two first-year coaches that I think everybody thinks are good coaches. Pete Carroll's a good coach. Mike Vrabel's a good coach. But new place, what's he going to do? Week one. You got
Chip Kelly factor's a good
two
one,
rookie
right?
running backs that everybody expects are going to be really key parts of the offenses at some point, but are they ready to be key parts of the offense right out the gates? The Chip Kelly, Josh McDaniels, two really polarizing offensive minds who some people really love and think are elite offensive guys. Some hold their head coaching failures against them as coordinators, and so there's a lot of layers.
And don't forget the Tom Brady effect. I think Tom Brady has his fingerprints all over the Raider roster when it comes to the coach that was hired, when it comes to Chip Kelly, when it comes to Geno Smith being the quarterback.
Yep.
Those were all, my guess, decisions that the TB12 okayed. So don't underestimate the impact that he's having in the game as well.
Even though he might have wanted Mike Vrabel to be his head coach. You never know. Maybe that was his first choice, and he had to move on to Grandpa Carroll. He's, I believe, when he takes
74.
When he takes the field Sunday, he's the oldest coach in the history of the game.
If he wanted Mike, why didn't he go hire Mike?
There was rumble. Well, because I don't think Mike wanted to go there. I think Mike wanted to come here. There were rumblings about that there may have been phone calls that were sort of not.
That's new. I didn't know that. That's news to me. Okay.
Rumblings. I don't know how verified or not verified.
Maybe it could have also been a case, guys, of what if bowl cut Baby Davis out there said, oh, he wants $15 million a year? Yeah, I'm still paying the guy that's probably going to be his offensive coordinator in New England like $100 million.
I don't know about that. Maybe it might be the fact that it was that Vrabel didn't want Tom to be the quarterback for his team when he was a free agent back in 2020.
Could be. Or maybe Vrabel just looked at it and said, who's your quarterback? You're going to try Geno Smith for a year? I don't think I want to play that game. This is my second turn at the head coaching thing. I need to go pick a young quarterback that I can latch
on to. I would have picked the Patriots over the quarterback situation easily.
All right. The voice you just heard was Ted Johnson. It is his turn for a three-point stance. Teddy, you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. Here is 60 seconds. Go right ahead.
What I'm trying to figure out is why anybody would send their kid to UNC to play football. Really. And this three-point stance is about Bill Belichick, the head coach of UNC, the self-saboteur, the man with NPD, the man who says once one thing and does another, the man who has no problem cutting off his nose despite his face. The man who always puts ego above winning. Remember Malcolm Butler? Listen to John Middlecoff. He's a former NFL scout. On his 3 and Out podcast, this is what he had to say that Bill Belichick is doing down at UNC.
information. Well, Belichick hasn't been very accommodating. And I was told by multiple people that he has banned the New England Patriots. The New England Patriots, if you're a scout for the New England Patriots, you are not allowed at the University of North Carolina.
Why on earth would any parent want their kid to go to a school where the head coach doesn't allow an NFL team to come scout their player? Why would any player want to go to a school where the head coach has an ego so big that he is willing to sacrifice an opportunity, perhaps, for that player just to satisfy his ego? It makes absolutely no sense, this new information that has come out about Bill not allowing Patriot scouts to scout his players. Is just one of the many, many hypocritical things Bill will say. They dubbed this team as the 33rd team, acting as if it was treating this program like it's an NFL program. It's nothing like that. It's kind of embarrassing and quite pathetic, if you ask me.
Bill Belichick has done it again.
Yeah, if this is true, I would never send my kid there, ever. Like, if this is true and you're eliminating, this is like MIT bans Google from campus. And you're like, wait, I'm going to send my kid there, but you're eliminating a potential employer, like a high-end employer. Only it's even worse because there's only 32 teams. So my son has a 1 in 32 chance to play in the NFL. And if he comes to your school, he really only has a 1 in 31 chance because you're not allowing the recruiters from that business to come check him out and build a relationship.
And it's not only just are the Patriots scouts banned, but it's just scouts in general. They're treated poorly down there. When you don't put a depth chart, a list of players on the depth chart, you're basically telling the scouts to go screw.
And how can you proclaim, like, his whole thing is, we're a pro program. We're going to prepare you
33rd
for the NFL.
Team.
But he said, we're going to prepare you for the NFL because what you're going to get here is a collegiate version of NFL life, except we're going to hinder your ability to get to the NFL. Like, that's counterintuitive. We are going to get a denial.
But that's so how he thinks all the time.
But we're going to get a denial within hours on this. Just like they remember
from
when
Jordan, probably.
Remember when Jordan was banned from the football blood ever, and they immediately, there was like, oh, she's not banned, it's this, it's that.
Yeah.
We're going to get some sort of scramble PR, fix this, because it makes us look really, really bad rebuttal from UNC at some point soon. Yes, Diz.
Well, maybe Bill hasn't heard the statue news yet. You know what I mean?
That's true.
So
Robert said he's going to put up a statue.
That
when
was
you're
just
done
yesterday.
Coaching.
Yeah. So, you know, it's, once that news gets to him, I'm sure.
How convenient that's when the news comes out, too. We learn about this today, the day after Robert does that. Like, boy, Bill, have a week.
That's why the statue thing is like, feels like a sham to me. What are you doing here? Why are we acting like we really like each other? We don't. They hate each other.
Because it makes you look good. Robert likes to look
good.
Does
it? Really?
It does.
Is this making him look
good? At Bill's lowest moment, he reached out with an olive branch. Just so you know, when you are fired in a couple weeks, I'm going to put up a statue of you. You were great here, even though you stink there. It makes Robert look good.
So it's like all the other stuff that preceded that. If you the last person to do the last nice thing, they're the ones that are that you say, okay, they're the adults here.
Yeah, kinda. Who laughs last laughs best. He who has the positive PR last wins the PR battle, or something to that effect. Doesn't roll off the tongue quite
Nailed
as well,
it.
But you got it. Don't shake your head at me, Stiz. And I don't know what you're drinking back there, but you shouldn't be drinking during the show.
If this is true, and I can't imagine the guy would say it if it wasn't, it's kind of amazing to me. Like, this is going to get out.
Oh, yeah.
This is such a bad look for your program.
Especially in that fraternity. You always hear that those scouts are like a pretty tight fraternity of how they're being treated and where places are.
You know, and Bill started at the bottom. He was a scout. He started at the very, very bottom. Getting the head coach probably coffee and doing his laundry for him.
Absolutely.
And look how he's treating these little guys at the end of his coaching journey.
Yeah, the spin will come soon. I'm telling you, we will get spin either by the end of the day or tomorrow. Oh. We will have some sort of spin on why this isn't true, or that's just part of the story, or there will be something spun out of this by UNC in North Carolina. But it's not a good look.
It's a terrible look. I mean, it's an awful look. It's brick on top of brick on top of brick of what's been an incredible, you know, kind of offseason. And he just, the self-sabotage, I mean, he has nobody's going to say to him, Bill, you think you should maybe reconsider it? Like the way Bill has thought his whole life, the older you get, the more that magnifies. So you're going to see more and more bad decisions from him the older that he gets. And that's clearly evident right now. There were signs of this behavior when we were winning. there were times when we were winning in spite of Bill, but no one ever talked about it. You didn't acknowledge it because we were winning. I mean, now that you don't have Tom as a cover and you're more farther removed from your last Super Bowl win, it's just becoming more and more, I think, clear on who the man really is.
I did have one quick question from your notes over there. You used an acronym early on in your three-point stance. Was it NPB?
NPD.
NPD, what's that?
That's Narcissistic Personality Disorder.
Oh.
Okay. Oh, it went therapy on him.
Oh, yeah.
Glad I asked, because I had no idea.
Yeah, it's look it up, NPD. It's the traits, I think, will very much line up with behavior that you got from from Bill.
And he never
Doesn't
evolved.
Stand for new player development?
No, and that's not what they're doing down there. I don't think he's evolved enough to keep up with the modern times. And I always go back to one thing. His buddy, Nick Saban, somewhere about 10 years ago, made a comment publicly. He goes, I used to win with defense. I've realized you don't win national titles with defense anymore. And he changed everything he did. He started bringing in wide receivers galore, quarterbacks galore,
and
winning with offense.
Bringing in offensive coordinators that were forward-thinking, progressive offensive coordinators.
He evolved the way he had to because he wanted to win over everything.
Yeah.
Even if he didn't win the Nick Saban way, Nick Saban wanted to accumulate titles.
Nick Saban didn't care about coaching with guys that he liked, that he could only work with.
Just win, baby.
Just win. And I don't think he ever wore cut off, sleeves to a press conference or to a practice.
He didn't.
Or have his girlfriend, give him kissy faces on the field before the game. I don't think Nick Saban ever did any of that.
That really bothered people, and it didn't bother me. That's the funny thing, is I didn't think there was a problem there because I said that was about her age more than anything else. If that had been his 70-year-old wife giving him a quick peck on the cheek before his debut in college, I think everybody would have loved it. But you know who hated that? My wife. My wife was ripped. What is she? She doesn't belong on the field. That's ridiculous. It's an embarrassment to him, the school, to her.
Have you ever seen it before?
I don't know.
That's the question. I mean, have you ever seen it before? That tells you something there.
Yes, it is.
Cowherd, maybe we can play this audio later, but Cowherd had an interesting point where he said, one of Bill's main problem is he keeps using the same menu, hiring friends and family.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Not going out trying to get the best offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators, et cetera. It's always like a friends and family.
So it's ego over winning. It's always been his first priority. Malcolm Butler is probably the best example, but what Stiz just said is another great example.
Doesn't he call them the reliables? Like the old reliables, basically. He did an interview with CNBC, and he talked about it, that he wants to keep people that he knows around him above all else. Whereas, you're right, Nick Saban goes out and gets a Billy O'Brien, a Lane Kiffin. By all accounts, he and Lane Kiffin butted heads.
That's right.
But, if you can coach and you have a good offense, I'll butt heads with you for a year or two. I'll get what I can out of you. I'll win a national title. I'll kick you out the door and bring somebody else in next because I want to win. Bill is very – it's funny because as much as we think Saban and Bill are the same and we kind of compared them along the way, they're buddies, there are a lot of very interesting differences with the way their careers evolved and they handled their careers and ran their programs and different things. So – good job, Ted. That was a good one. And I await the rebuttal from UNC, because I'm sure UNC will have something that we'll be talking about next as this soap opera continues. Speaking of soap operas, Tom Curran, NBC Sports Boston, is up next here on WEEI Afternoons. And he's going to tell us, in his words, what exactly transpired between he, Phil Perry, and Stephon Diggs, leading to Diggs' press conference yesterday. That's up next here on WEEI Afternoons. But first, Dan Ball has what's trending.
Your home of the Sox. Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now on WEEI, brought to you by Jackson Lumber and Millwork. The Red Sox fell to the Guardians last night at Fenway Park. The final was 8-1. Despite series wins in two of the last three homestand-ending series, the Sox have now lost the final game of three straight homestands against the Royals, the Orioles, and now the Guardians. Off day today for the Sox, they begin a six-game Western road trip on Friday that will feature three-game series against the Diamondbacks and the Athletics. Boston is currently tied with the Yankees for the top AL wild card spot. From earlier today, the Sox are placing reliever Jordan Hicks on the injured list with a shoulder injury and calling up left-hander Chris Murphy before tomorrow's game out in Arizona. The Patriots open up the 2025 season on Sunday at 1 o'clock against the Las Vegas Raiders. Patriots cornerback Christian Gonzalez was once again the lone player not spotted at practice today. His status for Sunday is still unknown. Also new this afternoon, per Ian Rappaport, Raiders wide receiver Amari Cooper has informed the team that he no longer has the desire to play and intends to retire. Tonight, the 2025 NFL season kicks off in Philadelphia as the reigning Super Bowl champ Eagles host the Dallas Cowboys. Kickoff is at 8:20. Coverage of that game begins right here on WEEI at 7 p.m. after the Christian Arcand Show. And finally, from around the league today, outside linebacker Nick Benito and the Broncos reached agreement on a four-year, $106 million extension, making him the highest-paid non-quarterback in Broncos franchise history. Contractors, builders, and homeowners, visit Jackson Lumber and Millwork for all your residential, remodeling, or commercial building materials and supplies. Jackson Lumber and Millwork, providing solutions and delivering results since 1946. I'm Dan Ball. That's the Trending Now on WEEI and WEEI.com. NBC Sports Boston Patriots insider Tommy Curran joins the afternoon crew, and that is next.
You can watch the show anytime via our live stream on Twitch.
Just go to twitch.tv/BostonWEEI.
And check out WEEI on YouTube for our video on-demand content updated daily. Now, more of WEEI Afternoons.
With Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
It's interesting, Tom, because, you know, there are little signs that he's just becoming a bit of a pain in the posterior.
I was referred to as a pain in the ass. You know, and I hate painting a posterior, but I'm going to say exactly what it really was. Obviously, I don't want to come across as that. And I'm going to say this. I want to be very clear. I'm an adult.
I did actually get a chance to talk to him briefly in the locker room Friday, because I shouldn't have said that. You know, it's that sort of speculative. So that was purely speculative on my part. It's usually a lane I'm not residing in. So I did want to apologize to him. And I made several efforts to do that. I talked to him Friday. I know you're looking at me sideways. You wouldn't apologize. That's fine.
WEEI Afternoons, and that was a cut-up of sort of this situation that's going on between Phil Perry, Tom Curran, NBC Sports Boston, Stephon Diggs, his press conference yesterday. And right now we go to one of the horse's mouths. Tom Curran, NBC Sports Boston, joins us here on WEEI Afternoons, brought to you by Drains by James, Eastern Mass's top provider of drain and sewer cleaning and repair. And by your New England Chevy dealers. Together, let's drive. Tom, you know, you were brought into this story via Steph Diggs during his press conference yesterday. We talked about that a little bit at the end of our show. I know you guys kind of addressed this in your own way on NBC Sports Boston yesterday. Can you kind of summarize where we stand? How did this all come about, and how do you feel like things stand right now?
I think they stand in a really good spot. He articulated that, hey, if you guys perceive me as a pain in the ass, and I think that in saying so, he was like kind of mentioning, what have I done necessarily to represent myself as such? But if you feel as if I have been that, I apologize, which certainly opened the door for a good discussion as to, hey, we saw this really occurred around the Diana Russini conversation with Diggs, where he intimated that he wouldn't be available for week one. Mm-hmm. And that followed soon after Todd Downing, the wide receivers coach, kind of saying that Diggs needed to be in the right place and engaged and understanding the places he needed to be. That coupled with maybe a little less production from Diggs during camp, and that might have been related to the knee, certainly likely that it was. But all those things and his history lead you to say, is he playing in a game here a little bit with his availability in week one? Is there a little bit of rancor here? So I just said, is there some smoke here? Is this going to be an issue? And Phil said, you know, if you look at it, the totality of it, it could be. So that's where that was. But I don't blame him in the least for using his public platform to address it if we're going to use our public platform to speculate on it. So I think it's in a good spot. So that's the background. That's where we stand. And, you know, until further notice, and I doubt not anticipating that it will be, but until further notice, Stephon Diggs is ready to go and be a contributing member of the team, and there should be no drama.
You know, Tom, just to flesh it out just a little bit more, I'm just curious if you think there's any part of you that maybe thinks, because it felt to me almost like Steph Diggs was kind of doing what Vrabel wanted him to do by addressing it. You know, that it was something that he had an issue with, that he went to Diggs, and that, you know, that is why that was the impetus for why Diggs even said anything at the press conference. And if there's a part of you that feels that way at all, do you feel that maybe Mike's listening to the outside noise maybe more than we thought? Because a lot of people think that that's not Mike's thing. That was Belichick's thing. Clearly, we all know that. That's documented. But do you get a sense at all that maybe Mike's got ears in the cornfield a little bit and is listening to things that that Bill used to listen to when it comes to how the media is covering his team?
I don't. I heard a number of people speculate that Vrabel wanted Diggs to do this because he created a firestorm with the comments to Diana, and he should go clean it up because Phil asked Vrabel about it, and Vrabel kind of bit Phil's head off a little bit in a joking manner. But to me, I think it was more Diggs saying, look, if you're going to call me a pain in the ass, I'm going to apologize and also point out that I really haven't done anything and I'd like to get off on the right foot. I think it was a good way for him to address it while it simultaneously saying, you know, I'm going to work with you guys. I want it to be a cordial relationship, but I don't think it's in the purview of you guys to call me a pain in the ass unless you have some kind of smoking gun. Nothing was necessarily misconstrued or misinterpreted. In my estimation, you had a guy who indicated I might not be ready for week one when he's been, you know, a friggin' medical miracle for about 6 months, which I stated time and again how amazing it was that he had gotten out there. But I should also say, too, that as we continue to do the work and talk to people around the team, it was soon thereafter indicated, and I talked to you guys about this, they don't have a problem with Diggs. At least that's, you know, what they're saying, and I have no reason to disbelieve them. So we did try, and I tried on this station, too, when I talked to you guys to say, look, from all I'm hearing, they're fine with them. So the smoke that we thought was there is not there. So you just do the best you can do. When he doesn't talk to you directly and you have to interpret something and you're on talk radio or television and you have to interpret and say what the climate is around a player, it is what it is. And I'm glad that he addressed it directly and we can move forward.
Speaking of players making their return to the field and what kind of contributions they may or may not make depending on their health, Tom, we've made a little bit of something about Christian Gonzalez's health on these very appearances the last couple of weeks, and now it looks like he's not going to play. One, how do you think that affects Sunday? And more importantly, two, going forward, I've heard speculation about could this be sort of a contract maintenance thing, or do we think there's a legitimate injury that's lingering for the Patriots' defensive superstar?
On the second portion, first, Fitzy, you know, we've done our best to try and press Mike and try and find out what that is. I still go back to the first question he was asked about Christian Gonzalez this season. How will heightened expectations around Christian Gonzalez be responded to? And Mike talked about, you know, you have to find that middle ground between doing what's best for you and your family and your brand. He didn't use the word brand, but and also doing what's best for the team. So I think that, to me, probably kicked off speculation about is he concerned about a contract, because it was a contractual conversation that wasn't really raised by us and was veered into by Mike. So now, you know, as it turns out, a guy leaves the field with what didn't seem like a catastrophic injury, and if it's taking a long time for him to come back, and there was an initial report from, I think it was Jordan Schultz, saying it's minor, he'll be ready for week one, we all instinctively say, well, what's the holdup? So I tried to ask Mike yesterday about, look, is he looking to be 100% or ready to play football? And Mike said, I'm not getting into percentages. Can the player contribute? Can he protect himself? Can he play a representative level of football for what we expect of him? And those are the things that he needs to see. So if they're not seeing it, they're not seeing it. I think that Mike has gone out of his way to really make it clear that he believes that the commitment and engagement of Christian Gonzalez has been good throughout. So I don't know. He's certainly, you're right, if he doesn't look like he's going to play this week, next week you got Miami and Jalen Waddle and Tyreek Hill. Does he need a ramp-up period? Since he hasn't tackled anybody, one would suspect, for the last, you know, since January. So it's just, we are where we were. It just bears monitoring, and it's going to be an ongoing conversation because he's the best player on the team.
Tom Karn, NBC Sports Boston, here with us on WEEI Afternoons. Tom, I have another Diggs-related and then wide receiver question. It's not about whatever's going on. This is on-field stuff. I was listening to you with Jones and Keefe the other day, and I think you said you just sort of don't really expect Diggs to play all 17 games. So I wanted to just clarify that. Is that just, you know, 30-something receiver coming off an ACL? And you've been extremely high on Kayshon Booty, saying he could be a number two on a good team, maybe a number one. Like, why are we so high on Kayshon Booty?
Kayshon Booty's good. Kayshon Booty was good. Kayshon Booty was good on a bad team last year. He really rarely drops the ball. I think he's got very good chemistry with May. He's durable. He's out there all the time. He's got unbelievable body control, great hands, and he knows where he's supposed to be, it appears. So all those things combined make him a reliable receiver. Who's the most reliable receiver that you've seen documented with Drake May? Probably Kayshawn Booty. So I think he's going to have a good season. As for Diggs not playing 17 games, it was more of a how often do guys play 17 games at the age of 32 playing that position? I'm not thinking that he's going to take a week off. I'm just saying, you know, if you look at Pro Football Reference in a year or two and see that he's played 14 games in 2025, you'd say, oh, that was good. He was only down for three games at his age 32 season. But I also think Diggs is going to be productive. You know, last year he was the number two to Nico Collins in Houston, and he was still on pace for a 94-catch, 1,000-yard season, and that was in eight games, 47 catches and like 496 with three touchdowns. So I think he could have a representative season similar to that. If you target him eight times a game, and generally he catches about 70% of the balls he's sent, five times 16, what's that, 90? I think it is.
Yes.
Pretty good by me. No, is that 80? Might be 90.
50, 80. 80. Five times 17 yeah. games would be 85.
Premature victory lap, it's 80.
So if you get 80 catches, and you figure he's going to average 11 yards per catch or so, because that's generally what he does. If you get 80 catches and 880 yards in a 17-game season from Stephon Diggs, that's everything you kind of hoped for when you signed him.
Sorry, Tom. Last Tuesday, they came out with their 53-man roster, and we talked last Thursday to you. But after the Tuesday 53-man roster was released, they had released two players, Kendrick Bourne and Javon Baker, and I thought that was odd. You referenced, I think, 2001, saying, well, there was only 51 players on the 53-man roster initially, and then they filled it in. But I guess I just haven't talked to you since they released Jabril Peppers. And I heard that news on Friday, and it just – something – it was weird. It just felt like something – a move that I just wasn't expecting, wasn't seeing. What were your thoughts on Jabril Peppers getting released, and did that signal something to you either positively or negatively?
I think Peppers is a good player. I think he was their best player in 22 and 23. It's surprising that he has no relevance at all. I wonder if the fact that he was going to be, you know, less of a starter and more a backup, I don't even know if that was going to be the case, but it certainly appears so since they released him. And that probably wouldn't set with a guy who's got the ability and resume that Peppers does. So my guess would be they didn't feel comfortable having him as a backup. To me, if you look at the scheme, Mike Vrabel wants fast, you know, center field type free safeties and safeties to cover the deep part of the field. That's probably why Kyle Duggar isn't here. And Peppers is nobody's idea of a gazelle at this point. Even though he's a great hitter, I don't think that he would be a huge liability in coverage, if a liability at all. But to me, there is a scheme change that I think has gone on that Peppers doesn't fit as well in, to go from being one of the best players on the team in one scheme to having a new scheme come in and him appearing to land as a backup. It leads one to believe that, regardless of, you know, whether Mike says it's scheme related or not. So I just think it related to those things, Ted. Really just, you know, is this a guy who, if we're trying to cultivate the perfect locker room where everybody is buying in and feels comfortable with their roles and is good to go, do we feel like Jabril Peppers will be comfortable in that role?
Tom, can I ask you for a prediction before we let you go?
Oh, sure.
What do you got for the game on Sunday?
I can't tell you.
Oh, you son of a gun. Are you saving it for TV?
No, I really think the Raiders, the biggest advantage the Patriots have is the West Coast to East Coast. 10 a.m., first game of the season, you're going to be playing at 10 a.m. You have to come all the way out here. They're probably going to have the more accomplished and more poised quarterback in week one. Drake May has to start well. The Patriots have to run for $150. I'm a little bit dubious as to the Patriots secondary, dealing with Bowers, dealing with Jacoby Myers, dealing with Michael Meyer if he's out there. Don't have to deal with Mari Cooper, apparently. And to deal with Jenty. So I think the Raiders are a little bit better team than the Patriots right now. Should be a close game. I'm going to go with 24-21 Raiders, just like the 1976 divisional playoff game.
Oh, Tom Curran picked the Raiders. What a start to the season. All right, Tom, we will we'll enjoy some real football tonight and this weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, guys. Take care.
See ya.
Tom Curran, NBC Sports Boston, picking the Raiders to beat the Patriots in the home opener at Gillette. We'll talk about it next here on WEEI Afternoons.
You're listening to WEEI Afternoons
with Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
But to me, there is a scheme change that I think has gone on that Peppers doesn't fit as well in, to go from being one of the best players on the team in one scheme to having a new scheme come in and him appearing to land as a backup. It leads one to believe that, regardless of, you know, whether it, Mike says it's scheme related or not. So I just think it related to those things, Ted. Really, just, you know, is this a guy who, if we're trying to cultivate the perfect locker room where everybody is buying in and feels comfortable with their roles and is good to go, do we feel like Jabril Peppers will be comfortable in that role?
That was Tom Curran with us just moments ago here on WEEI Afternoons. And Ted Johnson, you asked the question. You got the answer from Tom Curran regarding Jabril Peppers. You didn't love the answer. Talk about it.
Yeah, well, you know, Tom, love you. Mean it. You know that. But it's not a Tom thing. It's just, but I hear the same answer giving to that question is, you know, what happened with Jabril Peppers? He wasn't a scheme fit. So you didn't know he was a scheme fit until 3 days after you did your final 53-man. Like, it didn't hit you until, you know, a week before the season starts that he wasn't a scheme fit. You can't tell me that's why he was released. And, yeah, he probably isn't the best at covering, you know, down the field. That's why there are two safeties. One's called a free safety. That is usually the guy that does the covering down the field. Yeah. And then one's called a strong safety, and that's the in-the-box, bigger, more prototype, like a Jabril Peppers type player, plays in the box. So they have different, you know, even though they're called safeties, they have different roles. He is a strong safety, and I don't understand why he couldn't play strong safety in this scheme. And if he couldn't play in this scheme, then why was he on the 53-man roster? Why wasn't he released in March, April, or May? That's the question I have.
Even more than that, can I ask why most of the practices I saw, was he always one of the starting safeties with other players moving around him? That's a lot of reps to invest in a guy throughout August that isn't a scheme fit, you're planning on cutting. Like, you don't give a guy all those starters reps if you're planning on cutting him. That doesn't align.
You know what hits hit me, too? I think that the Jabril Peppers would be on this team still if Kyle Duggar was dealt. If they were able to find a trade partner for Kyle Duggar, then they were going to keep Jabril Peppers is my guess. But because they couldn't, they had to keep Kyle Duggar, and that made Jabril Peppers expendable.
Can't have two of the in-the-box, big-bodied safeties.
There is redundancy there for sure.
I also have a question, too, in terms of this whole scheme fit thing. I would assume as a coach, you come in, you take over a team. You're going to have players that first year that aren't necessarily perfect scheme fits for you, right? There's going to be – you'll get rid of some that just flat out – like a Jawan Bentley. He just doesn't fit, so he's got to go. But I feel like you're going to have to take some of the players and make them work for a year or so until you can really mold an entire 53. You've said it. It's about 50% turnover.
It's 49%. Yep.
Yeah. There'll be more next year because there's guys here that I think aren't perfect fits for what they want to be on offense or defense, whatever. So you have to make some of those work. And I'm with Curran. Peppers is one of your better players. I don't know where the number he slides in at. Is he a top 15 player, a top 20 player? But he's not the 54th best player on this roster.
I hear
roster.
A lot of people saying that Peppers is the Duggar's a better player than Peppers.
I've never seen it.
I don't know about that.
I've never seen it.
And I don't think the Patriots were thinking that for most of training camp either.
I've never understood Duggar. Like, Peppers, I can point to plays and hits and athleticism and forced fumbles and different things that pop into my brain. Duggar, it's like, he's out there. And sometimes he makes some tackles and does, and he had that one ball that Carr threw to him on the goal line in Vegas that he returned for a touchdown. I still believe when they had a traditional setup, it was Devin McCourty as the free safety, Kyle Duggar as the strong safety. I think that helped Duggar because it kind of took a lot off his plate. He just had one role. Then when you lose Devin McCourty, I do think they tried to blend and have them both out there and kind of play both roles. You might have to do some coverage here. That's when it really went south for Kyle Duggar. But he's still here. He's still on the team, and he's making a boatload, lot more money. So it's something we'll keep an eye on, because I still wonder if when you realize that you got Woodson and Hawkins on the field, you're like, boy, We're not very good at the safety position. 617-779-7937. It is opening day in the National Football League. There's a game tonight. There's a Patriots game on Sunday. So that means it's time for us here on WEEI Afternoons to do our season-long predictions. That starts up next. It's 4 o'clock football time, if you remember what that was. We're making our picks for the division winners, the playoff teams, and the Super Bowl up next here on WEEI Afternoons.